This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamoto, MPR. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Jane Bolton,
David Marshall,
Jim Oliver,
Bruce Markwell,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, we were talking about various events on the railways in the 50s and 60s and so on. Now there's one about someone's last trip to Hawke's Bay.
Yes, that was a very interesting day. He wasn't my normal mate. And we had started at about 9 in the morning. He turned up with 2 half-gallon jars of beer in his bag.
In his bag, so that...
And then we had a small leather bag that we used to carry a lot of our lunches and other gear sometimes. And they just fitted nicely 2 half-gallon jars of beer.
Okay.
Well, by the time we got to Ashurst, from Palmerston North on a freight, he'd emptied one of those half gallons.
How long would that take to get from here to
Ashurst? Oh, used to take about half an hour. At the speeds we used to travel, 30 mile an hour.
Okay.
And he went over to the pub at the, opposite the Ashurst station, refilled the jar, had a couple of farewell ales while he was there.
So this was his engine. Retirement trip, last trip before he died.
It was his last trip. By the time we got to Woodville, the other half G was empty. So he went to the pub. He bailed out at, opposite the pub at Ash at Woodville, and went and refilled the half gallon and had a couple of ales. I went into the yard. I took the train into the yard. Me just being the fireman.
So he was leaving it to you to drive the train, basically.
I did the train. Into the yard, we did the shunt, and I gave him a good blast on the whistle. Next minute, he came hairing up the yard as best he could and hopped aboard. By the time we got to Dannyvirk, we'd shunted O-ringy, I think, on the way as well, which gave him a bit of extra time, and he'd got rid of the, another half G. Into the pub opposite the station, had another round and a refill. Away we went.
Was he a big guy, this...
No, he wasn't.
Fairly slim...
Fairly slim sort of a guy.
Okay.
And
maybe it's all the running to get back on the train.
Well, I don't know. But whatever it was, by the time we got to Takapau, he'd had another refill at Makutiku, another one at Ormondville, and then Takapau. We changed over there. We did the same trick all the way back home to Palmerston North. By the time we got back to back to Dannyvirk area, he was not—he was literally not quite able to stand up, just about.
He would have needed the toilet on the way as well, wouldn't he?
We won't say what happened there. Anyway, we by that stage, I was doing the firing and the driving, and looking after everything. And we got back to Palmerston North later that evening. We managed to get him home. I think we put him in, grabbed his push bike he used to come to work on, put it on the back of what we termed the loco truck, the old Bedford, and somebody took him home. And next day when I came to work, I went and saw the boss and I said, next time you give me a job like that, forget it. And he looked at me and started to laugh. And he said, that is why you were on the job, because we knew you what he was going to do. And he says, you were put with him to get him there and back. What do I do now? But he had a last day at the Hawke's Bay. I don't think he'll ever forget. Well, he's long gone now.
He probably won't remember either.
He probably wouldn't.
I think his kidneys gave out.
His liver.
Everything probably gave out. But that was the nickname for the Hawke's Bay line was Disneyland.
Yeah.
When you went through the gorge, you had no idea what time you were going to get back.
Ah, okay.
Yep. Why? It was a totally different way of operating up there.
Yeah. Yeah. Why is that?
I have no idea.
No. You mean you get into a station and you they'd have to do something, so yeah. Change wagons or whatever, and you'd no idea how long they take?
Nope.
Okay.
You'd get up there. Some days you'd only go as far as a place called Matamau or Ormondville. The next day, if you were up there on a similar job, you might finish up at Waipawa. Yeah. It just didn't make any sense.
Oh, is it because of what you were carrying or where you had to go?
No, it was possibly there'd been a hold up at Napier or something like that, or they would be waiting for tonnage at Hastings.
So there'd be a lot of accidents and derailments.
No,
Napier was very unionised. Very unionised place.
Yep.
And, you know, if something wasn't right, down tools, you know, and this used to go on all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. And were the drivers strong guards?
It was shunters
and stuff. Shunters would walk off the job, and the train that was due out at midday wouldn't leave till 5:30 in the afternoon, and this kind of thing.
So these were sort of localised work to rule.
It was just
sort
a work to rule.
They were always like that. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
And I can vouch for that because just before I finished in 2010, I locked horns with the Napier shunters. I was working in the office for about 6 months just before I finished. And we were looking for some wagons to go to Hawera, to the big dairy company there. And they weren't on the train. And I said, "Where are these wagons?" And they said, "Oh, they're on train so-and-so," which was about 2 hours later. I says, "If we don't get them down there on the train they're supposed to be on, they won't be going until tomorrow." Well, he says, "That's not our problem." So as luck would have it, I knew the guy in Auckland at the train tonnage area. I gave him a ring and told him what was going on. He says, "Leave it to me." 5 minutes later, he rang me back. He says, "They'll be on that train, Jim." Okay, that's it.
So what was this? I mean, a lot of these sorts of things would have to be scheduled way in advance, wouldn't they?
Yes.
24 hours earlier.
Yeah.
They knew these wagons would be required.
Yeah.
And why they didn't put them on the correct trains, you know as much as I do. They just didn't. Yeah. Just too hard.
So how was the scheduling done? 'Cause these days you'd use computers and you make sure everything was.
Well, that's how I picked up on it.
It was all telephone and.
Earlier. The booze ones.
What about some of those? I know you've got more stories in this area, so. Your turn.
Well, Dave. For the want of repeating a story that I told the other day, for your benefit, I was on this train with this driver up the Hawke's Bay line, extremely hot day. And it was a coal-burning locomotive, and in the cab would probably be 120 degrees Fahrenheit. Mm. And we got down to Makutiku, which is just the next station down from Ormondville. And he said, "Oh," he said, "I can't hack this." He said, and this chap really was not a drinker, but he said, "I'm going to go over." He said, "I'm going to get a flag and a beer." He said, "It's that hot." I said, "Yeah, we'll go for it." So while he was over there, I did the shunt, put the wagons off, and before I'd actually finished the shunt, he was back on the cab looking quite embarrassed, red-faced. And I said, "Where's the flagon?" "Oh," he said, "I went in," he said, "and there was a guy behind the bar," and he said, I wouldn't mind a flagon. "You got a flagon?" I said, "Well," he said, "I don't know that I can give you one," he said. And old Ian said, "Why?" He said, "Well," he said, "this is actually my brother-in-law's pub. He's the licensee," he said, "and I'm an engineer from the District Mechanical Engineer's Office in Wellington." He got back into the cab quite quick.
So there's a rule that you're not supposed to drink while...
Oh, yeah.
Oh. I think somewhere in my memory there is a rule about that.
There is a rule book somewhere about that.
So were there any inspectors or people checking up on?
Yeah.
Yes.
So you just... They only worked
the day shift mostly, didn't they? Those guys.
It wasn't very often at night time.
You never saw them at night time.
No.
Yeah.
They'd be checking up on you during the day, but never at night, as you can understand. You don't be working night shift if you don't have to.
Yeah.
And So that was that story with poor old Ian. And
yes, it was quite a few of those wandering around.
You know, with the booze, like when I was in Taranaki, we went down on this train to Paatea. It was about 6 o'clock at night. We got to the signal at Paatea. No response, blew the horn, or the whistle as it was, with steam. Next thing, there's a guy yelling at us from the overhead bridge on the main highway, just below this, above the signal, and it was this Mr. Black, Knox Black. Don't you remember him?
I vaguely remember that one.
And he was the station man, you know, the station porter, and he'd gone up to get his flagons. And it didn't matter a damn. It didn't matter a damn whether there was a train there. No. You know, sitting there, could sit there for half an hour, as long as he got up there to get his flagons before the pub shut. that was how it was, you know.
Yeah. Pulled up at Turakina one early hours of one morning, 2 o'clock, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, Turakina, from Martin, and the signals were all against us. We said no. Where is he? He's supposed to be here waiting for us.
Who's this Robbie Ronganui? He was a station boy there.
Anyway, I was told quite happily to go for a walk. Okay, so away I went. Went down to the station, hammered on the door, couldn't wake him up. I could see him. The place was all locked up. No way was I going to be able to wake him up. Even an atom bomb would have been probably have a problem. Anyway, one of the other porters used to live back towards the township at Turakina from the station, and he got sick of my mate blowing the whistle all the time, trying to wake everybody up. So he turned up, unlocked it. Well, when we went to wake this guy up, that was sound asleep on the bench by the fire, he just rolled onto the floor and carried on snoring. There was no way he was going to wake him up.
Yeah.
The other guy had promptly set everything up, pulled all the signals off. We got out of the place, carried on. Yeah. And he says, I'm going to have to stay here. Yeah.
They had another guy there at Turakina, and I can't remember what his name was, but he had a pit bull. Mm-hmm. And if you knocked on the door, this thing just about bit the door in half to get at you from the other side. And you couldn't get into the station at all, you know, with this pit bull terrier that he had.
Yeah.
And he'd come out eventually, but in his own good time, when he's ready, not when there's about, you know, $100 an hour locomotive sitting out there, whatever.
Yeah. Didn't worry some of them.
No.
Who was actually in charge of the train, you know, once it's on the line? Is it the driver or the
guard?
Is it the guard?
The guard was in charge.
Yep.
Well, he thought he was.
he was down the other end anyway.
He was the sleeper in the back.
Yeah.
Right at the back. They don't have them,
don't they? No, they're gone. No. They're gone,
no.
Yeah.
No. Well, they were their own. They lost their own jobs.
This is where the drink came into it with guards.
Yeah.
You know, I can remember I told these boys the other day, I got into the guards van to go as a passenger up to Tai Happy, and this particular guard was there, and he was just sloshed, you know. Yeah. And next thing, he pulls out this big handle, and he said, Dave, he said, do you mind if I have a drink? I said, no, Fred, go for it. You know, I knew.
Oh, yeah.
And he had some homemade gin, and he filled it up. Would you like some? And I said, oh, that's right, thanks, I'll give it a miss. And anyway, no, you're going to have to try it. So I had a sip, I couldn't drink it. It was vile. And they used to drink this stuff.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is the guards were quite often
They were worse than the crews. Yeah.
So was it just railways that had a strong drinking culture, or was it part of the country as a whole in those days?
I honestly don't know, Stuart.
I'd
like to think it wasn't airline pilots.
Yeah. Well, was there a lot of drunk driving? Not too many people had cars then, was it?
Yeah,
it wasn't
I mean, you win. Hands up anybody who hasn't had a drink and driven, you know.
Mm.
And that's how it was in those days. You know?
Yeah.
One of my episodes, when I was about 18 or 19, when I was in Hawera, I went to a party in Stratford in my car that I just bought on time payment at £16.50 a month. Went to the party in Stratford, and I woke up in Hawera the next day. I don't remember driving home.
Oh, no.
You know? Yeah, so, I mean, it was right across the board, really, wasn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
So what about enforcement then? Were the police trying to pull people?
And just, you know...
Be careful.
They had no way of testing then, did they?
There was nothing. I mean, when you were out the window there, that was a test enough, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You didn't light a match.
I don't remember really hitting it when we were that age, hitting the grog.
Did you?
No. We did, but I don't remember.
Were there many accidents?
Well, I suppose
to a certain extent there were.
The cars weren't so powerful then anyway, were they?
Well, they were more solid, but there weren't that many cars on the road in comparison to today.
Yeah. Yeah. But they weren't that stable either. You know, they were higher off the road.
That's right. Yeah.
More movement that way.
So. And I mean, if you're doing 45 miles an hour, you're really speeding, weren't you, in some of them?
That's right.
You know?
Yep.
You know, but I think generally, I think the 6 o'clock swill had to be responsible for all of that, really. Yeah. You know, because I mean, when the 10 o'clock closing came in, as you may all recall, you couldn't get a park at any of the pubs that had car parks. Mm. You know, if you went there at 8 o'clock, you couldn't get a park there. Of course, that's all gone again, isn't it? Mm. You drive past the one down there in Tremaine Avenue. What is it?
Cleverly.
Cloverly, nothing there.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. Nothing there. Gone.
Mm. Yeah. No drinking, driving.
No, sure. Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think we should come back to the rail side.
I'm sorry.
You must have some more stories that you haven't told us yet.
Yeah.
There was something about the last train out of the yards. Would that be right?
Well, that was on the Saturday afternoon. They were getting ready for the big changeover at Roslyn.
That's when they moved the railway line from the square.
The old yard out to Milson, as it is. We knew it at that time. Now, there was a crossing loop up at a place called Roslyn, which was virtually straight off the end of the runway, and Dave can vouch for that because his house was right across the road from it.
Two-story house right there.
Yeah. Anyway, this particular afternoon, the story goes that the very last train had two diesel engines on the front and a massive, great big long rake of wagons out of the old yard in Palmerston. And they hit a car on the terrace end crossing.
Did they?
Mm. Held everything up for about 2 hours.
Yeah.
All the engineers were sitting out at Roslyn waiting for this train to get there so they could get it back down out of the road so they could do all the big changeover.
Mm.
And they were jumping up and down and going crook. And it was a 17-year-old girl, apparently, was the driver at that time, and three of her mates, and they'd been playing netball. Dad had lent them the car for the afternoon so they'd go to this netball, and they were going home. Yeah. And, yeah, there was a big problem. Yeah, the last train.
So what
train.
Happened with the car? Was
the car was written off. Dad wasn't very happy. He got a big, massive bill for the hold-up.
Did he?
But the girls were okay. The passengers were okay. The girls...
The girls were apparently very lucky. They were lucky.
Yeah.
They were. Well, he wasn't going very fast.
Going
And he had a lot of restricted wagons on there that shouldn't have been... You know, they were just getting them out of the yard, the old yard, so they could start pulling things to bits.
Okay.
And I think he was restricted to about 10 or 15 k's an hour max speed.
Mm.
So, you know, why they got in the road, but that did happen. Yeah.
So with the shift in the yards, was that better for you, you think? Was it more room out there or easier to work?
Absolutely.
Well, put it this way, it was 1900, the gear running around in Palmerston, in the middle of Palmerston North, with 1960s gear out in the Milson Yard.
Yeah.
60 years difference.
So when you say the gear, what sort of...
Well, buildings and everything else.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And now they're talking about maybe move all or some of it out towards Bunnythorpe, is it?
That's right.
So what would that mean?
We have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, as much as we do.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm. If it's right what this has been put in the media at the present time, it's astounding me where they're looking at putting it.
Yeah, 2.5 kilometres
And it's being built in conjunction with their forward thinking of trains at least 1.5 kilometres long.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I've had a train up the town, up the Waikato that was 1,180 metres long. That's a fairly healthy. It takes a while to go across a crossing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the people in New Zealand are going to have to get used to
that's
bigger trains.
Yeah,
and longer
that's
trains.
A bit annoying for someone. You're in a car, well, you've got to wait for the train to get there, and you've got to wait for it to all get past.
Well, it mesmerises as it goes past.
We had a fault at the North Street level crossing with the detection of trains to operate the crossing alarms, which was barriers as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a 10 kilometres an hour restriction. When we find that out, that goes on straight away. Slows all the trains down to 10 k's an hour until we get to the crossing. And we were finding the people at the North Street crossing had worked this out. The trains would only be doing 10 k's an hour. So they were going across in front of the trains.
Ooh.
Going round the barrier around. Regularly.
Yeah.
Being caught at it. They just wouldn't wait.
Hmm.
Because as soon as we got the front of the train over the crossing, we just took off. Hmm. We end up.
Getting back to drinking, I just recalled something I remembered of years gone by. In the old locomotive depot at the bottom end of Main Street, they had an 80-foot light tower. And I remember the crews who were in the shed on a Saturday evening would climb up the light tower with their flagons and with their binoculars, and they would watch the stock cars at the showgrounds.
Yes. I didn't do it, but I know the guys that did it. Yes.
Scotsman's grandstand.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to get up all sorts of stuff.
So you were saying that the yards in the by the square were sort of basically obsolete. You moved to new stuff at Milson.
That's right.
Yep. Now they're, what, 60 years
it's
old?
It's obsolete now.
Yeah, they're obsolete.
Yeah. Not big enough.
Okay. Yeah.
Not big enough.
Okay.
They added, amazing, really, isn't it?
When did they put the extra three tracks in over by the main line, Dave?
No.
Do you remember?
No idea.
That would be
in the 70s.
After I finished.
It'd be in the 70s.
No,
oh,
no, no.
There's another. I don't know. Really.
Yeah.
I was just trying to think.
It would be about 20.
I've been
about 8 or 10 years
ago.
About 8 years ago.
Well, the water gone under the bridge since then.
Yeah.
They added three extra tracks into the yard, and it's still not enough.
But there's talk now, they were saying that, you know, so much of the transport has moved away from rail and they've not been supporting rail and the quality of rails are going down. And yet you're suggesting that there's actually more rail activity now than there was in the past. Would that be true?
Well, put it this way, there's more tonnage, less wagons. Now, the average wagons in our early days would be, what, 15 to 20 tonnes max.
Mm.
Mm.
Now they're averaging 50 tonnes and some of them are up 70 and I've actually seen the odd wagon come in some yards being panics on because they've been up around 90 tonne.
How many wagons would there be on a loco at any particular time, you know, on average, just roughly?
Well, it depends on the area.
Yeah, it depends on gradients and stuff like that.
Right.
The average one around, and I quite often just, because I live from Fielding, not far from the track, and every now and again a train will go past and I'm out there and I'll just give them a count, and they're regularly up around 35-ish, some a bit more, some a bit less.
Yeah.
And you work it out at, say, 50 tonnes a pop. You're getting up around 1,000 tonne, most of them. And that is pretty close to a full load for a single engine. And the tonnage on the trains is just, they don't see it on the road.
Yeah.
Because you can get a lot more weight in one wagon. It's quite interesting to talk to some of the road transport operators. And they don't realise just how much weight some of those trains have got on board. And milk trains were one of the classic examples when we had them. That was two truck and trailers of milk in each wagon.
Do they not have them anymore, the milk trains? Why not?
They built them. Well, somebody decided they weren't getting enough return for transporting the milk. So they put the charge up, which made it more viable to increase the factory at Paiatua. As soon as they did that, that was the end of the milk trains.
I notice they're all those tankers are all stored in the Palmerston North Yard. Just a huge row of them.
Yep. 64 of them all the book.
Yeah.
So is there much of a view about the future of rail?
Well, I personally think it's got a future.
Very much so. Yes.
You want to get more off the roads onto rail.
I mean, you've only got to go drive to Auckland and think about the trucks that you try to pass when you can. Mostly you can't because of the traffic coming the other way. Trucks everywhere. But it's a worldwide problem, isn't it?
Yes.
So have the trucks been maintained at a reasonable standard?
Well, that is something I'm not sure of
no.
at the moment now. I've just picked up something on a friend sent to me on YouTube in my emails regarding engines that are now surplus to requirements here in New Zealand, and they're judged to be old hat anyway. They've just been done up at the Hutt workshops for a contracting company based in Australia, and they've got an office here in New Zealand now. And they do infrastructure construction for railways and maintenance on railways. Now, what that's including, I'm not sure of yet. But they have bought at least three of these engines, and they're going to be shipped out. In fact, I think they shifted last Saturday to Auckland so they can be shipped to Australia.
Okay.
To work in Queensland area, or possibly even over in Western Australia, which has the same track gauge.
Yeah.
Now that was something I was going to. The railway gauges. Do we? I don't know. What can you describe those a bit? Is it narrow and wide, or something?
Well, what they term the standard gauge, which is basically all over the world, is 4 feet 8.5 inches between the rail heads. The track gauge we have here in New Zealand is 3 feet 6 between the rail heads.
The rail heads is the wheel.
Between the rails.
Okay.
You have wider tracks in Spain, India, Russia.
Yeah. They'd be more stable, I guess. Harder to maintain.
The wider the gauge. Yeah. More stable, but it also allows you to build them the rolling stock wider. Now, that rolling gauge, as I'll put it, is in New Zealand is just over 8 feet, about 8'3", I think. And the height, which increases the centre of gravity,
yes.
The reason we went 3 feet 6 in New Zealand was we could get round sharper curves. The narrower the gauge, the sharper the curve you can get for some reason. Why it works that way, I'm not sure, but it does. The standard gauge all through Britain, they don't have very sharp curves. They do in some places, but very, very reduced speed.
They have trains that lean as you're going around the trains, feel as if you're just going straight.
That's right. Yeah. Well, we don't have those, but they have one in Australia on a 3 foot 6 gauge. Okay. That's in Queensland.
Yeah.
The tilt train
up
there.
Reminds me when I was in Shanghai, I was on a cruise ship and we went for a bit of a trip in the city. And we got on this train to go to the airport. It was 33K from the city at the Shanghai airport. And they said it's the fastest train in the world and there's a speedo in the carriages, and on the way out there the speedo showed 441 kilometres an hour.
What would you say your big highlight was, your time in the railway? What would you put up the top of your list as a highlight?
I was a steam addict, if you like to put it that way. Steam had a real attraction to it. It was a living thing, can I put it that way? Steam locomotive, it was a living being, if you like to think.
So two locomotives of the same same model, horsepower, same design, and so on.
Yeah.
They'd have different personalities.
Oh, they did, absolutely, most definitely.
So how would you see
it's
that?
It's hard to figure out, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you look at it's just a lump of black steel sitting there, the steam coming out of it. But they all had characters for some reason.
Mm. So how would you describe them?
Well, it's like Thomas the Tank Engine, if you think of it that way.
You mean some are well-behaved and some are awful?
Some are what they used to term good steamers. I mean, they were easy to shovel coal and they steam very well and you could always keep the steam pressure up. Another one would be an absolute pig. Whatever you did, you couldn't keep and maintain the steam pressure in them. There was just all these different variables with them.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Everything varied, no matter which way you looked at it.
When the steam pressure went down, did the thing go slower? The train go slower?
Well, it would eventually stop if it went right down.
In my mind's eye, I'm thinking, here you're shoveling away and thinking, we're going in reverse.
That just about happens with diesels too, take my word for it. One comment, I had problems getting up the spiral one night. And train control
the spiral
was between Tamanui, and we were struggling, and train control was getting a bit annoyed because it was taking me too long to get up the hill, and we were going that slow it wasn't even registering on the speedo, and I was watching the ballast. Every now and again I'd have a look at it's going
the
going
ballast out. Is
the ballast stones. That's the stones holding the track in place. And I was making sure the stones were going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And finally got under my skin, and I just quietly said, "Oh, there's that snow we passed 50 yards back. He's packed his bags and passing us." I didn't hear another word from the train controller. And we were just moving.
Yeah.
And that was it. But we got up the hill. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.